Hello and welcome to the first part of this Earth Whispering experience, which I've entitled The Self and the Landscape. And I'm starting at that point because we generally view those two things as separated. You know, the self versus the landscape, or the self in the landscape. We feel it's us battling the landscape or even working with the landscape. It's as though they're two separate things. And a baby doesn't make that distinction. We've kind of been educated out of a perspective and into another perspective. As I said, a baby is not aware there's even a boundary between themselves and the outside world. For them, it's all one experience. Now, people often say to me, and it comes up a lot, I mean, my dad always says it, that I'm very lucky, I always land on my feet, that it's as though I have a guardian angel watching over me. They come up smelling of roses. These are comments I get all the time, and I generally kind of don't say anything, but it's not luck, and I'm not I'm not kind of saying that I made it all happen. That's not what I'm saying. It's not luck. This is what I'd really like to communicate. Luck, when you see good luck in inverted commas happening, it's really because the self and the landscape are working as one. So that you find yourself seemingly always in the right place at the right time. And it comes from this expanded awareness of not just seeing yourself as a powerless little being encapsulated in skin, you know, going about your world, being buffeted by all these external forces and powerless to do anything about it, but that you're in fact a very expanded being that is an integral part of the landscape, and that the landscape is a part of you. And we're actually huge. We're actually huge, incredible, multidimensional beings. And there's a continual communication going on between inside and outside. And I don't even know if we can call it inside and outside, because that viewpoint is in fact quite an illusion. And it's, as I said, it's one we've sort of been trained into. And it's in fact very easy to train yourself out of it. So this first section is about how to go about that, how to expand our idea of self so that it really does include and become one with the landscape that we're a part of. And it's not just a mental thing that we think about, but actually that we embody, that we feel in and beyond our bodies. And it's insanely easy to do, as I said, and there's a bit of a spiritual mythology out there that this is some enlightened pinnacle to reach, and you know, you've got to kind of sit in the lotus position for 20 years before you get there. But these days, I really don't subscribe to that idea at all. I think it's like flicking a mental switch and it happens in seconds. And it's the only reason that anyone has an issue making that switch or making that shift in perspective is that we've been told since forever that such things are woo-woo, stupid, imaginary, illogical, or downright wrong. And it's a kind of gaslighting. You know when someone tells you that what you are feeling or experiencing isn't correct, you know, that's gaslighting, you know, that you didn't really experience it, that you're imagining it. We often see it in the abusive relationships arena. When, you know, you think someone's lying to you, and actually they are lying to you, and they tell you you're imagining it, that you're so suspicious and paranoid, and why don't you trust them? And that is all not true. And then they give you a million complicated explanations to why it's not true, what you are seeing with your very eyes. And this is very similar to what happens in our education systems. Yeah, as I'm always saying, I was a teacher, and I've been a teacher in many different levels of education. So yeah, this is, I can vouch that this is true. When one version and one perspective on the truth is set out as the gold standard, because that's what happens in education. There's one view. It's like we're looking at the whole of reality through different pinholes, and one of those pinholes has been deemed correct. And any child who dares to see things differently or to experience things differently and to voice it, because a lot of them are smart enough not to voice it. They will be given reasons why they're wrong and then told to learn those reasons by heart for an exam. And I can't imagine a more obvious example of brainwashing. I mean, this whole when you get people to write things over and over again and learn them by heart for an exam, that is what brainwashing is. And that's not to say that everything that we have been taught is wrong and it's all a conspiracy. That's not really where I'm coming from. I'm talking about different keyholes that we're looking through onto reality, and only accepting one of them as valid. That's my point. So in Taiwan, as I said, I had to teach kids things that I knew weren't right and that I didn't actually believe myself. This happened quite a lot when I was teaching primary school children, because primary school children are so open and they are actually genius. I found them genius. The older students get, the more and more brainwashed and conditioned they become, and the less interesting they become, actually, until they become like us. So this is the only barrier which we have which stops us from seeing and experiencing ourselves as w at one with the landscape. That's it. And so you have to make a choice, and it's this choice which is key as to what's going to happen next. And I find choices and decisions extremely important. So the choice is this: are you going to trust what you feel and your inner knowing, or are you going to trust an outside authority? And that is the distinction between being part of this planet and being who you really are, and looking through a wider keyhole, or even trying to get rid of the whole door in the first place. And, or, basically being controlled by an outside force, because that's really what it is. If you're always allowing outside authorities to dictate what's true and false for you, you're basically allowing yourself to be controlled by it. And that doesn't sit with me very well. Having many years now, coming up to half a century of seeing the outside authority usually being wrong. This is when it comes to my life usually being wrong. And probably if you're listening to this, you're like me, and you know which choice you've made, and you're interested and want a mirror or validation for that inner knowing and that inner wisdom which is actually running through everything on the planet. And this is the beauty of it. We now already know about the fungi or fungi, whichever you want to call them, networks that connect the trees. So, people used to think trees were separated and everything was combating to survive, and it was all one big restaurant. And now we know that that's not true at all. Again, that's one tiny pinhole on the whole huge reality. And even the thing we're looking at now, even the way I'm going to explain it now, is another perhaps wider pinhole, but it wouldn't be the whole truth. We now know that things are communities, and that there's a specific individual component and a community component. So there's a forest and a tree, and the tree stands alone in one way and tries to have its own success, if you like, or its own expansion and growth. But at the same time, it's interwoven into this forest community. It will step in and support another tree with its own nutrients if a tree is sick. It will communicate to other trees about danger, and other trees will assist it when it suffers some kind of plight. So there's always this interconnection and balance going on between the individual and the landscape. And I think when you have a piece of land, you're always in this balancing role between your ideas about what you'd like to manifest in that space and what the land herself wants. Compromise, that word, I really dislike it. It's an awful word for me. It kind of means no one gets what they want. This isn't compromise. This is more like, because you're all plugged into the same thing, to the same source, what's good for you is good for the landscape and vice versa. It's just seeing it and seeing how you can work it in this way. Now, in each of these talks, or I think almost all of them, I add a very short, I hesitate to use the word meditation, but I can't think of another better one right now. So I'm going to, I hesitate to use that word because people imagine, sort of have ideas about what meditation should be. But these are little interludes, and they're really just there as opportunities to shift perspective on a deeper level. And they're what I do to shift when I feel that I'm losing that wider awareness, or I'm being pulled into a kind of other kind of reality that's not the one that I particularly want to be in. Then I come back to these. I don't even want to call it a practice because practices are very structured and very, very stuck. They're more just little keywords and clues and ways I have of snapping out of one perspective and into another. They're very short, and they will have more impact if you can do them alone in a quiet, private space in nature, because nature is already vibrating and resonating at a planetary and a connected level. It hasn't been brainwashed out of itself. So, just sit for a moment, eyes closed or open. Sense your shoulders and your spine, and just feel your spine straightening and your shoulders relaxing. Now feel where your body touches the ground. Feel that connection between the earth and your body. Sense that boundary. Feel the heat inside you. And the air on your skin, which is cooler. And sense the connection between the two. Just sense your fingertips. Notice the exchange between inside and outside. Can you be sure you know exactly where you end and the outside world begins? Sense the air touching your face, nose, cheeks, lips. Sense the heat moving within your body, especially in the hands, and then expanding out. Radiating. Gently rest your awareness on your breath now. Notice the air moving in and out. Notice that exchange, the outside moving in and the inside moving out. Exchange is continually happening between inside and outside. Then gently expand your awareness beyond your body and into the landscape you're a part of. Sense that shift. It could be in your room or on a piece of land, in a wood or in the sea. Just sense that expansion. The sounds from far away entering the ears. Light, colour, temperature, all these things from the outside becoming pieces of us. Inhabiting the great room of our awareness. When you see a tree or the skyline or the grass or hills, clouds, sense that you are connecting with them, that you are now a part of it and it's a part of you, that you have joined in an experience. Stretch your presence further and further. Just let go of all the limits you think exist and sense yourself expanding and becoming the landscape. Hear the birds, the wind in the trees. Feel the sunlight or rain. Sense them taking part within the landscape of your being and within you. There's no boundary, no border. You were never just in here, and that was never just out there. Every time you hear a noise, experience a change in light, sense the wind, animals, just know, sense the macrocosm communicating with you, reaching out to you. It's a magical story we're in. It really is a magical world. The earth is here. You are here, connected. Once again, move back inside your body. Feel where your body touches the ground, where the air touches your skin, the heat in your fingertips moving out, the blurred boundaries. Feel yourself connected